Welcome to our next episode on our IX on Extension series here at the American Ag Network. I'm Jessica Benson, and today we're talking with Joe Eichle. He's a crop and weed scientist at NDSU. And Joe, I was actually doing a little research trying to just get some background information on our topics today. And you were actually just in an article talking about dicamba and some soybean cupping. So that's kind of what we're going to focus on today. So let's just get into it. But So Joe, what are some signs or some concerns and considerations when it comes to herbicide carryover from 2020? And you know, when it comes to grazing, maybe what some concerns are with that as well?
If I kind of look at it, if we start with that herbicide carryover concerns from the 2020 season, you know, it's no secret to anyone who's living up here that basically once we got to, what, July of last year, the faucet really turned off across the whole state and haven't had a whole lot of precipitation since then. Of course, typically, you know, eastern North Dakota a little bit more, but those in the west, not a whole lot of rainfall at all. And so when we get into those scenarios where it's a dry late summer and then we had a very dry winter as well, that's when we get, concerned about herbicide carryover from the previous year. And anywhere in the U.S., any given year, we're going to have some carryover concerns, and it's always related to drought conditions. It's usually always the driver where we see carryover. And we're kind of the ones pulling the lucky card on that, I guess, this past year.
Yeah, we're really taking the cake on that.
and so typically what we'll call is herbicide carryover, it's always some of our longer lived herbicides in the soil. So those with a little bit more persistence, and then also those that are more difficult to break down into non-herbicidal components, especially in the lack of moisture. So what does that mean for us in North Dakota? Well, the one we use most statewide of concern is a product called clopyrrolid. So this is a growth regulator herbicide that we use a lot in corn, and we use a lot in our small grain production. And so it's in products like Wide Match that we'll use in small grains, Stinger and Resicor that we might use in corn. And so a pretty effective herbicide for us on a lot of our weeds that we battle. But if we don't get a decent amount of rainfall during the summer following application, then we have that risk for carryover. And that's been our concern all year, and it is showing up in pockets. We have a few other products that we have carryover issues with as well. So there's some of those corn products we use have what we call the Group 27 herbicides. So these are products like Callisto, products like Laudis, that we just use a lot in corn, particularly in the eastern part of the state. And we're seeing some of that persist and show up and injure some of our crops like soybeans, dry edible beans, and some sugar beets as well. And so, again, no big surprise given our weather conditions that we've had, but always never fun to see that actually show up in the field. And especially with that clopyrrolid product, that is one of the confounding factors, and what you kind of let off with is we've got some cupped or puckered soybeans, whatever you want to call it, kind of across a large swath of the area, especially in the eastern North Dakota and in Minnesota as well. And that's one of the many things that, and especially one of the many herbicide things in the environment that can cause a cupping or puckering response is clopyrrolid carryover. So kind of a short, quick version of some of the issues that we'll see for that. And what I talked about so far was primarily for cropland. And so you asked, pasture or range as well.
Right.
And for the most part, we're not ever really concerned about carryover of herbicides in pasture or rangeland. So really what we're looking for in pasture and rangeland are herbicides with long persistence. So if we can have a herbicide that can give us good weed control for a year, that's excellent in pasture rangeland type situations, but that's too long in a crop situation. So we usually have longer lived herbicides with more residual in those pasture rangeland situations. The issue that we can see when it comes to herbicides applied last year in pasture rangeland and carryover concerns into this year is usually if we would have applied some of these long lived products like aminopyrrolid, which we have in Milestone and Forefront. Also, we use a lot of Toradon across the state. So if you applied that and then mowed and baled the grass that was applied to, and then rolled that bale out onto a field where you're overwintering your animals, that's where we can see carryover from pasture herbicides show up in cropland. And we do have several cases of that from a few different livestock producers across the state this year as well.
Okay, and then so, you know, there's talk with forage shortages and pasture shortages. Some people might consider grazing their fields that, you know, maybe they're not going to harvest, or, you know, it didn't turn out much of a crop anyway. So what would we be concerned about looking at something like that?
Yeah, so if we're going to just turn our small grain into forage, or even some might be thinking about corn and some of the worst corn stands that we have, the main things we will be concerned about, and the one would be from a crop and feed perspective, and I'm more of a weed scientist, but I know we talk about nitrate levels in plants in these hot, dry conditions, and I've seen some information from some of our agents that we do have some high nitrate levels in some of our small grain fields. So, not being a cattle producer, that's going to be probably number one on my list, is testing for nitrates and the issues that can cause. The second thing from a weed science standpoint is that if you did have a herbicide applied to that crop, so you sprayed your wheat or you sprayed your corn with the intention of taking it to harvest, but you decided now it's better to use it as forage, then the things we have to consider there are the grazing interval between applying that herbicide and feeding that to our livestock. And a generalization, and we do have some pages in the Weed Control Guide, the 2021 North Dakota Weed Control Guide. They give the grazing and haying restrictions of all of our most popular products. If I were to generalize, I'd say most products, it's no longer than 30 days. That changes if you have lactating animals, but we don't have a tremendous amount in our state of that. So, you know, if you're feeding cows or anything that's lactating, it's usually, you know, a little bit longer of a period.
Sure. So let's cover the topic of post-emergence herbicide performance in hot and dry conditions.
Yep. And the other thing that we always talk about with the drought. So, you know, we'll talk about herbicide carryover, nitrates and other issues in feeds. Post-emergence herbicide performance, we always expect a bit of a drop-off when it comes to drought. When we have a real persistent drought like this year, you know, a bit more of a drop-off. And so we're seeing that now reflected in our extension calls too. So people have made a lot of their post-emergence applications, gone back to scout their fields, and just noticed a lot of the weeds were not actually controlled. And some of the reasons why we expect a drop-off in performance in hot, dry conditions are just like our crops, just like our animals, things are just kind of hunkering down and trying to survive. And so what weeds will do, a few different things that they will do to try and survive drought conditions. The one is we can always expect a weed or plants in general to develop a thicker cuticle. So that waxy layer on the outside of a plant, that its main purpose is to keep things out, so just any contaminants, but then also moisture retention. So in a drought condition, a thicker cuticle helps retain moisture within that plant. So what this means from a herbicide perspective is that usually one of the biggest challenges we have with applying a herbicide is actually getting our droplets into the plant. It's pretty easy to wet the surface of a leaf, but we actually then need those droplets to get through that cuticle and into the plant for the herbicide to get to the site of action and actually control the weed. So a thicker cuticle just means a larger or thicker barrier that we have to get through.
Right.
And so that leads to challenges, and usually the, you know, some of the things we can do to overcome that are use a higher rate of an adjuvant, these products that we add into the tank to help herbicide performance. And some of those are used to dissolve cuticles. So our crop oil type of adjuvants, they're very lipophilic, and so they actually will help dissolve the cuticle and bring the herbicide through the cuticle and then into the plant cell. So we can do that. We can also increase our rate of herbicide and then also increase our carrier volume. So if we put more water on a given acre, then we get better coverage, more chance for a droplet to land on the leaf and get through that cuticle.
Sure.
And then the other thing that it's always worth discussing, kind of two more things with weeds during hot, dry conditions. are if we spray, especially in the peak heat of the day, then the leaf canopy architecture can change. So we all kind of know in a drought, what's corn going to do? It's going to roll its leaves and look like a pineapple plantation. Well, our grass weeds do the same. So they can also roll their leaves, and that's an attempt to preserve moisture and survive hot drought conditions. Broadleaf weeds will actually kind of make their leaves a little bit droopier. And so just changing the way their leaves are just presented to the typical environment, you know, normally you may have a parallel leaf that's just trying to capture as much sunlight, but if it goes at some sort of an angle in order to prevent heat loss, that means that rather than having droplets land on a parallel leaf vein, our droplets now have to deal with a different angle. So it's just because of that, just in general, more difficult to get the product that we need onto the plant.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's just, you know, those little things can make, you know, a big difference, really.
Yep. And we see that in hot, dry conditions. And this year has been hot, dry for a long time. And all those kind of reasons. And I'll just add to the fact that the weeds aren't actively growing either. And we get best control of weeds when they are actively growing. Herbicides work best on actively growing weeds. So kind of package that all together, take kind of that whole long-winded explanation and just say that herbicide performance has dropped off this year. But
yeah,
that's really kind of the reasons in a quick nutshell.
Sure. So cupped, or puckered soybeans has been a concern in the Midwest now. So what's causing this? And can you maybe dispel some of the rumors about the cause?
Yep. And so this has been a pretty hot button issue since 2017, really. And so that's when we, across the U.S., launched the Xtend soybean system. And so that's dicamba tolerance in soybeans. So herbicide we've used for years in corn, small grains, pasture and rangeland. Very effective broadleaf herbicide, and we engineered soybeans to be tolerant to it. But we also know dicamba is a volatile herbicide, so it can go from a liquid form into a gas, and especially under hot conditions. And basically, when this system was released, we've got new formulations of dicamba that were engineered to be less volatile than some of our older systems. We've seen somewhere in the U.S. some off-target movement of dicamba basically every year since, and in 2021 is again no exception to that. And so what we've gotten into kind of a situation now is that in large areas or large geographies, we can have basically a lot of the non-Xtend soybeans, so the ones not tolerant to dicamba, show some level of what we'll just kind of say is cupped or puckered soybean leaves. Okay. And we all know dicamba can cause this. But what we're really looking at for 2021 is, I could probably say it's a potpourri of different issues that's causing cupping or puckering in soybeans. And so it's, you know, if you get on social media, it's just kind of a big infighting thing of it's dicamba, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yes.
So I just like to try and give facts of, okay, I think that each field probably deserves its own special attention, needs to be walked to truly determine what's the cause of the issue this year. Is there a lot of damage due to off-target movement of dicamba? Yes, there is. Are there other things that cause cupping or puckering? And I say yes, there is as well, because those are pretty generalized terms to describe a soybean leaf response. And so some of the other things I like to kind of mention with this cupping or puckering, we talked about clopyrrolid carryover earlier, mm-hmm. another product that can cause that. And that will show up on any traded soybean. So even the Xtend soybeans can be cupped or puckered because it's not dicamba, it's a different molecule.
Sure.
Some of the other things that we will see, and there's a couple products that we use, and we're using them more recently just to combat some of our herbicide-resistant weeds. But we have what we call the Group 14 herbicides. And so these are products like Flexstar, Cobra, Blazer. And we really use a lot of these to control our broadleaf weeds, like our pigweeds, our ragweeds. And what most people think of when they think of those products is we call them a burning herbicide. So within a few days, All the leaf tissue that comes into contact with those herbicides will become brown and necrotic. Just looks like we burnt the tops of the leaves off or burnt the whole weed down. And so soybeans will tolerate this. And the leaves that were out at application, you can see this burning brown necrotic spots. But new trifoliates, if they're emerging during that application, won't have that typical bronzing or necrotic spotting, but they'll get kind of a crinkled looking leaf to it. So as they're trying to come out, it's a response to that herbicide application. Same type of thing with what we call the group 15 herbicides. So these are typically, historically, we use those herbicides in a pre-emergence situation because they don't have any foliar activity on weeds, but we need them to get into the soil with water and they will control any weeds trying to emerge. Well, recently we have gone to, especially in soybeans, using these in season because we'll have some weeds like water hemp that will emerge throughout July. So even though it has no foliar activity on a weed, the goal is to apply that to bare soil within a crop canopy and then hopefully get some rainfall and control the next flush of weeds.
Sure.
Well, what these products can also do is the trifoliates, the first one or two trifoliates as they're trying to emerge from a soybean plant, will also cause some sort of crinkling on the leaf. And that's more of what we call a drawstring effect. And if you look at a soybean leaf, it's almost like someone took the base of the leaf and just kind of pulled a string, and then it causes all the leaf veins to kind of curl inwards, which will cause all sorts of, you know, if you want to call it puckering of the plant tissue in between veins. And the classic condition results in a heart-shaped leaf because that tip of the leaf was basically pulled towards the base of the leaf and the edges surround that, so it looks like a heart. But another one of these things that if you're driving by on the roadside, it's like, yeah, that's a puckered soybean leaf.
Sure.
And so that's kind of another reason to really get out and really evaluate the symptomology, because those two classes of products I just mentioned, we're going to apply field wide on a soybean field. And so you may have that puckering type of leaf response field wide, but those symptomologies of those two classes of chemistry are different than dicamba exposure on a soybean plant, which will also, the generalized term is cupping, but some of the things I tell people to look for to see if it's dicamba versus another product is that usually with dicamba exposure, we'll have kind of a cream or white colored tip on that soybean leaf.
Okay.
And then also the veins on the soybean leaf will turn parallel. And in light exposures to dicamba, enough to cause maybe a little bit of cupping, it may only be the 3, 4, or 5 leaf veins nearest the tip that actually turn parallel. But there's other classes of chemistry you won't get that parallel vein response either. So again, kind of a number of things that cause cupping and puckering, and I don't want to downplay the fact that there is, you know, quite a bit of dicamba injury out there this year. But
sure.
Like I said, when you kind of look at, you know, a statewide appointment like mine, it's very hard to say, you know, blanket statement, it's this. We need to get out and walk some fields.
Right. Yeah. It's it sounds like very subtle differences that you need to get out there and really pinpoint.
Yes.
So let's talk pre and post harvest weed management in wheat and some other crops.
Yeah. And so this has been, this is ramping up and will probably kind of dominate some of my phone calls in the coming weeks here.
Okay.
As wheat harvest has really been pushed fast by the hot, dry conditions. And couple this with what I talked about earlier, where we've had some poor herbicide performance, we have a lot of weedy fields out there this year, especially in wheat. And what this will really lead producers to look at kind of two different types of options. We can manage some weeds pre-harvest in wheat. And when I say manage weeds, it's really, if we're looking at a wheat plant that's 1.5 feet tall, the weeds may be 2, 2.5, 3 feet. So we're not going to actually kill weeds at that type of height with a pre-harvest application, but it makes harvest a lot easier versus living, green, full of moisture, fleshy weeds. And so we'll do some pre-harvest management just to help actually harvest the wheat crop. But one of our biggest concerns as weed scientists kind of statewide right now is once that wheat crop is off in the next 2-3 weeks for many people, believe it or not, because it's felt like forever, we still have a lot of summer left. And we know that when there's no crop canopy in a field, that we have, you know, weeds will take full advantage of that. And so with a lot of summer left and the fact that we're going to remove the crop canopy, we're going to have a lot of weeds. And the one that's on my mind top and foremost is kochia, that will take advantage of that field without a canopy. And we definitely are, we could have a situation here in the coming 2 months where we have quite a lot of kochia that goes to seed in these wheat fields if we don't have some sort of post-harvest management for those weeds. So for many, that means, you know, in the eastern part of the state, that means tillage. In the western two-thirds of the state, probably some sort of herbicide program. But, you know, another thing to potentially consider is kochia actually makes a pretty decent forage. So, you know, back in
we'll
the...
Let it grow then.
Don't say that too loudly, but, you know, back in the late 80s with some of those droughts, kochia was some of the best forage around. And I know we had some in western North Dakota in 2017 that, as long as the nitrate levels aren't high, you can harvest that kochia and use it as feed. And so it might be an option to consider for cattle producers who also have wheat fields is maybe, you know, if you turn the cattle loose in those fields and kochia is the only thing growing, it might be a decent feed source. So maybe something we don't always think about when it comes to post-harvest weed management. We think herbicides or tillage, but this may be a year where we'll get some value out of those fields if you have some animals.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a little bit of good information in a tough year for most people. Joe, thanks so much for talking with us today. This is great information, and I want to get this out immediately. It's perfect timing. Thanks again, Joe. This is our Ion Extension program. I'm Jessica Benson for the American Ag Network.